Welcome to the Recruitment Entrepreneur Podcast. Today, we are joined by Nine Tech Solutions co-founders, Jack McLean and Louis Singleton. After meeting each other at Oscar and gaining almost 20 years of experience within the recruitment industry combined, the two decided to go at it alone and started their business, Nine Tech Solutions, a cutting-edge recruitment firm to provide end-to-end solutions for technical businesses across various functions. They partnered with RE earlier this year to support them on an entrepreneurial journey. So, join us today with Jack and Louis, who will take us through how they successfully launched a tech business in a challenging market. We hope you enjoy.
Jack, Louis, thank you very much for joining me on the Recruitment Entrepreneur Podcast today. It's great to have you here.
Cheers. Obviously, I think for the two of us, this last sort of few weeks, months has been really hectic, and I know we've had this sort of planned out, so I've actually been looking forward to getting in and speaking with you.
And obviously down in London today?
Yeah, I know people often think that we have to come down from the north on like a steam train without whipping the flat cap on.
On a three-day trek.
Yeah, change your money and bring your passport. But yeah. We got the train down this morning. I did a post about it on LinkedIn this morning. I think one thing that you'll get from both Jack and myself is we're passionate about the northwest of England and Manchester and the surrounding areas. But I do love London and coming down. I disagree with Elaine from Venatrix's comments, and I've said this to her, that you can get a decent coffee outside of London. but I do love coming down here and being part of it.
So you're set up in Manchester. Just before we go into Nine Tech and the business, tell us a little bit about your recruitment experience and kind of what got you into it to start with.
So both of us had been at our previous company for 10 years, joined a month apart, got into recruitment for 6 months, thought we'd find a proper job. Here we are 10 years later. So during that time, I've always specialised in kind of freelance contract recruitment. And Lewis has done mainly kind of software development and then opened up kind of enterprise sales. So those are kind of the key areas that we're looking at moving forward. But yeah, we'd kind of been at the same company for 10 years. We're at one point probably looking like we were going to be lifers there, really. And then, probably got to a point in our lives where we were looking a little bit for kind of the next journey, but also a bit of an end game, kind of the organisation we were at. We didn't really see kind of where our next levels were. We're both kind of very senior people within that business and probably reached our ceiling point, really.
Yeah. So when you guys worked together, and obviously you said you were a month apart, how did you meet? Like, were your desks next to each other and that was it for a decade and you couldn't get rid of each other?
So when we joined, we had quite a bit of a very lads group. Mm-hmm. I probably don't think 10 years ago we were probably as Gen Z as some of the people maybe Gen Z now. So yeah, we had a very, very lads group. So it was about five or six of us. We all used to go out like very regularly, kind of Thursday, roll in probably in the same clothes that we had on Thursday on a Friday. Just really, we're dead competitive and really wanted to be as good as one another. And out of that group, we've all done fairly well. Like obviously myself and Lewis stayed at Oscar the longest. But lads have went off and set up their own businesses, kind of become directors in other recruitment businesses. So, we always had a really good ambitious group that kind of drove us along the way. Me and Lewis, obviously being the last two standing, probably, became best mates and now going on this journey.
So when you look at then that move into that next journey then, I think obviously, I guess it's quite different from being successful in a business that's already really well established, that, big client base, big candidate base, and obviously your personalities thrived within that environment. When you were kind of talking about this in the really early stages, going, we could do something together, did you kind of talk with each other and say, you're good at this, I'm not, I'm good at that, you're not, like, how could this logistically work?
Do you know what, right? It's funny how the actual process has evolved. Jack's a great bloke and that's why we're mixed, but I've strapped myself to Jack in terms of a business partner because I would always look and Jack was the busiest person in the room. Like genuinely, hand on heart, I'll always say that. You'd look up and Jack would be constantly working. And that's why when you immediately think of it, you think that's somebody that could bring success out of me in terms of what we do. But as we went through this process, I think we started to evolve both speaking to RE, speaking amongst ourselves, doing project work on it you've probably encountered it yourself when we spoke, where we sit in terms of our skill set. the marketing aspect, the branding, the blue sky thinking in terms of that, you know, big vernacular, that's where I'll fall in and start to do things like that and really sort of think wide. Whereas Jack will get everything going and we'll make sure everything is operationally airtight and we'll make sure that when we do scale and we do expand that the shop floor is humming and everyone is working and grinding. Whereas maybe if we need to change something like a PDF or something like that, that's maybe where I'll so it's really interesting. I think when we started speaking about it, it was you're good at contracting, I'm good at perm. And actually there's just so much more to it. And I think maybe if people are looking at going on a journey with a co-founder, go on it because you'll actually find out more about yourself as well, and you'll find out more about your friend, your business partner to be, whoever it is. You'll discover those things along the way, and I think that's something that's been really, really interesting and exciting for us, both going through the process and then starting together. Because immediately as we've got into work, you know, Jack's been doing some great things from operationally in terms of Canada sourcing tools and all these different things, and I'll start looking at other aspects of, all right, how can we do this? How can we start attracting talent immediately straight out of the gate?
Yeah,
and it's been interesting. So there was probably a lot less to it when we started. Now there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, so kind of the yin and yang working together. And I think, you know, when you know, and we've talked about this on this podcast and other meetings as well, is setting up a business is quite scary. It's quite insular. It's quite lonely. But, you know, so pros and cons are, but it's kind of your decision. It's your bat, your ball. You kind of make it what you will, whether you do that on our own or with a partner. But obviously when you do it with a co-founder, it's, well, you're with somebody. You can do it with somebody. You can bounce ideas off. But on the kind of con side potentially is there could be conflict, you could disagree, you know, healthy discussion obviously would arise. But probably a less lonely place to do that with. And obviously you've got a decade behind you guys, so that's probably already been and done.
Oh, we've had more healthy and unhealthy conflicts than I can care to remember.
and probably more to come.
And you know what, we've both said that Jack did his LinkedIn post when we left our last place and paid mention to it. We're eyes wide open in that regard.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna view things from a different vantage point, and that's going to drive conflict. But I think once we eventually circle back and realize that the conflict is coming from a want for progress and a strive for moving forward and betterment of each other in the business, then
it's the same goal and same ambition, isn't it?
100%. We're not sat there trying to do anything for the detriment of each other. We're both trying to make each other as successful as we can be.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're probably going to be quite level-headed with each other, isn't it?
Yeah, we've both got the same kind of end game of what we want to achieve out of it. And I think we're both lucky. We've known each other 10 years. We know what makes each other tick and probably what winds up one another as well. But within that, we know that we can, you know, the arguments that we have, we're not ones that hold grudges
with
one another. So if we have a bit of a ding-dong, we'll have a ding-dong.
Yeah.
That'll be it. But, you know, over the first couple of weeks, we've learned again about the other areas that we're both strong at and we can both kind of utilize and both improve one another. You know, there's loads of stuff that Lewis is better than me at, and I think there's stuff that I'm probably better than Lewis at. So just utilizing those areas and then, you know, trying to drive it forward as quick as we can.
Really. Yeah, and playing to your strengths. So Ninetech then, where did the name come from?
You answer this one.
I have a feeling there's
you answer this one. I actually came up with it.
So that was the hardest bit. As anyone...
actually had a dummy name. We had a dummy name that we presented to James, and I won't say it now. We had a dummy name, and we were like, right, we're speaking to James Carr. We're going to do this, and we'll talk through it. And he goes, oh, right. And he went, really don't like that one. So immediately,
we're messaging on WhatsApp, going, this has started my life. the name... There's a few reasons, to be fair, isn't there? I'm going to claim I'm a massive Newcastle United fan. So my claim is it's all because Newcastle United's number 9 is the most famous shirt in world football, and my hero Alan Shearer wore it, but that's probably only half the reason. Lewis is a very, very good rugby player, much better rugby player than ever I was a football player, but we both wore 9 as our number. So we kind of were having a bit of a think, what can we do that connects to us as a name? And it's hard, you know, because, you know, when we looked at colour schemes and stuff, obviously supports Man United, I support Newcastle, so we were never going to have either black or white or red, black and white, because that was a no-no. And there's so many things you want to try and think of. And we had a few names, like, which were certain techs and then our name, and just didn't feel right. And then we kind of come with 9tech and we're a bit like, I can't hide that. That sounds quite decent. And then there's a bit of a backstory, a bit of a reason for it. It feels like us a little bit.
I think as things grow as well, right, and obviously at the moment it's just a couple of blokes and a dream. But as things grow, there's some really cool stuff that you can do. One thing that we've said about is sort of giving back to community and sense of community, both technology in the northwest of England. And there's things you can do with the Number 9 in terms of Nine Foundation, in terms of from a CSR perspective, from your employee value proposition, you can do things around your values in terms of whether it's an anagram of the word nine, whether you can do nine values or all these different things. And there's some really, really good stuff that you can do about it from them from looking at a brand perspective. But I think the big thing for us, there was an affinity to it.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. It meant something. We could sit there and stick two surnames together and sound like a law firm if we wanted to. But for us, it just wouldn't have felt right in terms of where we want to be, aligning to the technology community, the kind of business that people are going to want to work for. I had a joke with Greg when we were at the forum about sort of different businesses almost like having playing styles like a football team. And I joked and I said, we're going to be like a Klopp Liverpool. We're going to be heavy metal football. It's like, that's what we're going to be. We're going to be high energy, high fun. And I think the name Nine Tech sort of fits that.
Yeah.
And that's where we sat.
No, nice. So going into Nine Tech then, obviously your kind of decade of experience and what you guys bring to the table is, you know, as a partnership, what's your focus going to be on then launching Nine Tech?
I guess it's split between what we've always done. So in terms of contracting perm, you know, Lewis is done a lot of software development stuff, and that traditionally has been a market that we know an awful lot about. We know a lot of companies in those areas. There's a lot of people that know our names within that kind of software development market, especially within the Northwest. And Lewis did a number of years in London as well. And then for myself, I've traditionally always done contracting, mainly around kind of infrastructure networking and project office. So within that, we're straight away covering an awful lot of areas where, you know, we've got a good breadth of clients that we know will come to us in time. Yeah. And we know, you know, we've had a lot of people contact us straight away from opening the business, just being like, do you know what, guys, fair play, well done. You know, let us know how we can help, how we can support, you know, when we can work together. So that's been great. So probably the key areas are what we can do in terms of contracting permanent. I don't think you're going to have many people starting out as a two-man band that have got as much experience as us two doing recruitment and tech recruitment at that.
I think Jack's just nailed it there. I think, obviously, it alluded, we've done the engineering piece, we've done infrastructure, we've done project office, we've also done sales and enterprise sales. So for a technical business, you're not really going to get many places. We were a great business before. We'll both not say a bad word about the place. But you'll not get anywhere that really can offer an end-to-end suite to technical businesses where they can turn around and go, we'll deal with your commercial arm, we'll deal with your operational arm, we'll deal with your project office team, we'll deal with your infrastructure team. And we've got that knowledge between us from both a permanent and contract perspective. So for a technical business, and that's where we'll differentiate. There's some great companies out there, but they'll just do data, or they'll just do software engineering, or they'll just do sales.
So more niche within that.
Yeah, exactly. And we can turn around and actually look at a technical business from any standpoint and not only be able to provide the staffing solutions, but also actually understand how those things knit together. So when I turn around and you know, for instance, speak to a technical pre-sales engineer about his next career move, they might want to go into implementation, which might fall in Jack's world a little bit more, or they might want to go into infrastructure because of the products that they've dealt. Not many people will be able to tie that together and be able to understand sort of how the two knit together. And I think that's where we're pretty unique, the pair of us. And like I said, for two people to have that between just those two, and not having to bring in lots of external hires to bring that aboard, I think that's quite unique.
So on that point then, you know, from an outsider looking in and to your own comments is, you know, you guys have 20 plus years now with like really good bespoke niche experience with good clients. Was there a point where you were like, obviously really complimentary about your last business and then go, do you know what, been here, done that, it's been great, we're just going to go off and do it ourselves, but without any kind of equity, private partnership, whatever you want to call it, and go, let's just find a room, sit in it and build a business on our own?
So the initial concept of doing it this way would be probably been something that I'd maybe been exposed to a little bit more, mainly because Jack built more at the old place, so he's got a few quid stowed away. But having dealt with the enterprise sales world and knowing a little bit more about venture capital and private equity and a little bit of things like that, you deal with sales leaders who are dealing with board meetings and having to raise different rounds. And looking at that concept was there. I think for a while, the main concept was literally going to be me, you, phone, dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we maybe needed was back office operational support, with Jack being a contract recruiter that can get us out of the gate building and scaling a great contract, but not just from a cash flow and payroll perspective, but having all the appropriate infrastructure in place. And I think that was quite big for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I, to be honest, I'd always been of the opinion, well, if I'm going to do it for myself, I'm just going to do it for myself.
Yeah.
I want 100% of, you know, everything. And then obviously you look at it and I know there's contract clients moving forward that will work with me and, you know, will be good clients for Nine Tech and our business. And for us to be able to have that back office, that support, be able to do contract out the gate was really important. I'm not sure I want to use up all of my money and sell a house to fund paying contractors. And and obviously the way we can do it this way, you know, enables us to do it a lot quicker and not have to build up loads of reserves before we go into that area. So once we started to learn a bit more about that, and then the support that we can offer, and then, like I mentioned it earlier, like both of us wanting to have an end game, like when we went through the process, and I think Greg said to us once, what's your dream? And I said, to own a racehorse. I want to have a racehorse that runs at Cheltenham Festival. And he was like, that's your aim? I was like, well, yeah, that's like one of the things that I want to do. And we were like, this can give us an opportunity. You know, this can, you know, get us to a point where potentially we can sell the business or, you know, kind of look at it in 10 years' time and go, right, can we go and do something else? Can we, you know, go into a different area? Can we set up things along the way? And it kind of just, before, well, if we're going to go into it, let's do it properly. Let's do it. You know, let's do it big time. Let's not kind of just do it. It's two of us working from home, you know, doing it as a lifestyle business, because I don't think that would ever suit either of kind of the way we are, really.
We're both quite aspirational in terms of that regard. And I think that that's where, when we were at the forum, something great that David Picker said about, he'd always thought that, and somebody had actually said, well, no, give equity away, get the support, get the appropriate growth and infrastructure in place. And I think we could sit there from our houses and have a nice little lifestyle and do things. But in terms of the really big stuff, in terms of, like you say, owning a racehorse at Cheltenham Festival or doing whatever and progressing on, that's where getting a partner involved was key. And then looking at RE for that regard and having that was kind of why it all just made sense in the end.
Yeah. So you guys launched beginning of July. How have you found that in your head? So obviously when you talked about it and what you kind of imagined what that would be like and the amount of work that needed to be done with a partner, which is obviously the unknown
for
to you
the
guys.
Initial setups.
Yeah, for the initial setups and to the kind of the reality of what you've had to do. How's that been?
I
really enjoyed my mini retirement.
Jack's still not got out of his mini retirement where he
he's still in South America.
South America
in your head.
For God knows how long. So it's been interesting because we thought, right, okay, we'll just have to do a couple of things and then get in really good to go. But actually, there's so many things that you made a great point before. It's like you were doing so well as a sort of a cog in this big machine. There's all these things supporting behind it. We've not really got them in place yet, and we need to get them in place. Appropriate candidate pools for certain vacancies. If you're covering end-to-end tech, it sounds great. It's a great strap line, but fundamentally, there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to go into that. So it's building things like that up. It's understanding what we need to do in other areas and build that out. So it's been an eye opener because we've been going, you know, we need to do this to appropriately build out the CRM and put the information on and get that set up. But also I need to work on this job.
Yeah.
So it's been a bit hectic.
Yeah.
It's good because I feel like the pair of us have got a new lease of life. Like, you know, like I've been at the office like 7:20 for the past like 3 days.
Well, they say a change is as good as a rest, but you've done both, so you've been.
He's been on his world tour, but we're both coming reinvigorated. You know, we had a conversation yesterday evening where we were both getting ready to leave the office at 6:30, having been in from 7:30, and he went, "I'm just worried of not doing enough," which is, it sounds daft, but it's a great mindset to have because you know you're driving the right direction.
And you're driving it for yourself. And I think, you know, it's funny you mention that because I think that's probably 99% of what people say is, you know, whether it's with a recruitment entrepreneur or however they do it, but when it's with a partner is, we just didn't realise how much infrastructure or foundation is needed in the back end. There's no doubt that you guys would go in, pick up the phone and be successful. But, you know, when you're trying to build a foundation for scale, your plan will be to hire this year, obviously, you know, a massive EVP and talent acquisition strategy. If you didn't have all the bits and tools in place, you know, and obviously when you're launching a business, you've got to be part of that. And obviously that will die down as you start getting busier and things like that. So I think people are genuinely surprised. You know, we've got a huge team at RE that supports all of our founders across the portfolio. And I think everyone that did the launch is surprised just how many hours and how many people are involved in that.
Yeah, I think Greg said to us when we went for lunch the other week, he was like, someone who'd gone through the launch. He was like, after 2 months, he felt like he'd gone through an MBA. And then it was like, that's how you do feel, because, you know, bit by bit, you're learning different things and understanding wider things about the business. And that's probably been the most exciting thing, like the recruitment element of it, your day-to-day recruitment stuff, we know.
Yeah,
we've been doing it for 10 years. You know, it's our bread and butter. But the other business side of it, obviously, we're exposed to quite a bit in our last place, but not as much as what we are now. So learning that and understanding that and getting an idea on how much time that does, you know, take up is really interesting. And just, you know, it's allowing us to grow. And like we said, you know, being reinvigorated is exactly that. You know, I've not woken up for work, not wanting to go to work. And there probably was a point over the last year or so at the previous place where I was like, today's going to be a slog. This is a slog at the moment, but it's not, I'm not feeling like it's a slog.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it's definitely changed both our mindsets and kind of the way we feel going into work.
You mentioned, obviously, you came to the CEO Forum up in Glasgow in June. What do you think will bring, you know, obviously you're in a sector that's popular, it's going to keep evolving. We've obviously got other partners in that area, and you've spoken, you mentioned David Pickhurst, and obviously we've got a few others in the portfolio. What do you think the value of that will bring to you guys?
I've already seen it straight away. And so one of the reasons that we chose Recruitment Entrepreneur as partner of choice was mainly down to Elaine Venatrix as well. So when I saw that, Venatrix are a business that I, having operated in probably further up the food chain in terms of the roles that we work on. I tried to do the SDR piece at my old place and always struggled. And I looked at Elaine with great envy and was like, how are you doing so well? but their brand was brilliant. They were successful and they were doing it great. And the way that they integrated into the SaaS community, the things that they're involved in, was fantastic. And that's why when I saw that they were part of the portfolio, I was like, that's where we need to be. And then immediately off the back of that, Elaine and I have had a knowledge share that's been brilliant. Like, I couldn't thank her enough for her help already in terms of just minimal things, little WhatsApps here and there. But then I've always said, and I said this at the CEO Forum, we want it to be reciprocal.
Yeah.
You know, we aren't going to be a take business. Mm-hmm. We'll give help where we can, whether it's
helping
to penetrate customers, whether it's we're actually thinking of launching a Manchester office. What do you think? Or I'm up for the football this weekend. Can I keep in your spare room? We're going to try and help where we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we'll do. So the help that we're going to get across the group in so many different ways when we need it, you can immediately see that it's there, sort of the immediate touch. So that's going to be a real positive. You could see it there, and you could see that everyone felt like, you know, I said to you, looking through the numbers and stuff like that, it felt like each unit was its own business, but you do feel like it's part of this wider organization.
Yeah.
Like, you don't feel like you were in silo. And I'm sure there were days when we feel like that, right?
Of course.
And it's going to happen. But, you know, Elaine WhatsApped me for something yesterday. Can you help me with this? Helping each other out straight away. So I can already see an immediate benefit of that.
So with the tech market, obviously there's been some changes. You know, I think James called it kind of a slowing down. I think in Q4 from last year, we've seen kind of grassroots, I think, across the portfolio, across all sectors, and obviously tech included as well. How do you envisage kind of, you know, you're launching mid-year. How do you see H2 for the tech community?
I think going off what we've seen straight away from the first few weeks, we think like we've come in at a really good time. The like speaking to people within our network, people that, you know, we deal with, other recruiters that we know, which are numerous, it seems like it's picking up. I'm probably a little bit old school in my approach, where I've always thought in a bad market, there's probably people that drop off and don't do the right things and don't go out there and do the nasty bits that you need to do to get business on. Mm. I've always been one of them, where I think there's nearly even more opportunity in that market, especially from a contract point of view. You know, you can always sell contract in a market that might be dipping down a little bit,
because
your sell is, you know, don't take up someone perm, you can have someone contract for a period of time. So you've always got that. So I think we're both really positive people on the outlook of, I've never really let the market determine how I feel as such. So I don't think it's anything that we're really concerning ourselves with.
Yeah, I think that it's a quite bullish attitude that we've both got. We've both decent sport, been successful in recruitment. We're both sort of wanting to push on and kick on. We won't be deterred by it. I think the technology market, James hit the nail on the head. It's been a correction. 12 months ago, 18 months ago, like the joke I made was everyone got 100 million at Series C. Anyone that raced Series C just got 100 million for being there. They've struggled to race since then because the valuations are so high. And especially if you look at salespeople, for instance, you have customers offering 80, 90 grand salespeople, 150, 120 grand basics, just because they needed people.
Yeah.
And now they've cut them off. And some of them have cut them off under the guise of redundancy, when in actual fact, it's not. And I think we've seen that correction. We've seen that stability. And you're going to see the growth off the back end of it then. And you'll see the revenue coming into the businesses, and you'll see a positivity from that. But from our standpoint, honestly, we're not really fussed. You can say it's up, it's down, it's left, it's right. You know, we both obviously worked through the pandemic. We didn't work through the credit crunch. So I think one thing I hate about recruitment is people have worked in it longer and going, my recession was harder than yours.
it's not a good conversation, honestly, when you're comparing recessions.
Oh, well, you know, my recession too. Well, I actually worked through the millennium. Honestly, the dot-com boom, whatever.
Yeah.
But what we know is that if you're a recruiter, and if anyone's listening to this and thinking about setting up their own or whatever, you're recruiting this, genuinely, the best people that you'll see recruiting when the market is up are probably the ones that just did all the right processes when it was down.
Mm.
We look back and, you know, there's people that have done 400 grand per at our old place, and they were still pretty new to recruitment during the pandemic. And they didn't have, you know, an extensive network or loads of, you know, knowledge they could do. They just worked appropriately and worked hard.
Mm.
And I think right now, if you're a technology recruiter, the market will correct. It's beyond our control. What can we do? We can go out there and correct it ourselves. But there's enough that you can do to make yourself successful now.
And I think that's a really valid point. And actually, ironically, 2 weeks ago, we had the same conversation with James Kahn on this podcast, and it was, you know, how to be successful and how to grow your business.
I think like James Kahn.
Yeah. I mean, identical. You know, so how to grow your business in a challenging market. And his points, and you both said it, is doing kind of the detail. And I think, you know, we've had conversations, and I think the CEO Forum, you know, when you look and compare last year to this year, you know, not to say that it was easier and, you know, everything came flooding
it was,
in.
But you could
skip steps in the recruitment process and you'd still be successful. Whereas now, I think you said it, Jake, was you've got to go back to basics and kind of work your way through the process all the way through. And, you know, there is always, the recruitment market hasn't stopped.
Mm.
You know, fundamentally, there's still business to be made, and you just have to go, and it's not going the extra mile, it's doing the due diligence and process with clients, with candidates to ensure. So you are working a tad harder, arguably, than you were probably 12, 18 months ago.
Yeah, and that always happens. It has dips, and there are periods of time where, like we said, like last year and for a couple of years, you probably were getting away with, not getting away with murder, but you were getting away with
poor practices, not appropriate process.
Yeah.
And still being able to, you know, make really good money. You know, in this market, you've just got to be a bit more diligent. You've just got to be doing a bit more stuff. And whether that's, instead of contacting, I don't know, 10 people for a job, you know, contact 15, 20, like just make sure that you're on top of every little thing that you do, and you're giving yourself the best opportunity doing that deal. And that's all really that you can do. You're not rewriting the rule book.
Yeah.
It's just doing the right things and doing more of it.
Yeah.
And that'll always lead to you being able to, you know, make placements, do deals, you know, from a BD perspective. You've just got to contact more people. I know it sounds really, really simple, but it is, you know.
Yeah.
Recruitment's not rocket science at the end of the day. That's why two daft buggers like me and him. So yeah, I think you just got to do more, really.
I think that moving forward and away from last year, like, I mean, so it wasn't necessarily easy, but genuinely, at points it was, and it was because there was just such a high demand.
Mm.
You know, you get people ringing you up and going, I need 5 salespeople being paid 110 grand. It's like, when's this ever going to happen again? I think what's interesting when we look back retrospectively, the CEO at our old place, somebody that we both got on well with, well respected and taught a lot, he said a lot during the time, make hay whilst the sun shines. It's not always going to be like this. You know, it's not always going to be this positive. And, you know, 10 years in recruitment, yes, we went through COVID and things like that. This is probably the real market spike, first one that we ever saw where it was like it was. And I think retrospectively, when you look back, you almost, as well as we did, you almost wish you'd listened to him a bit more and said, actually, yeah, we could do more with it. And now it's not necessarily that, you know, recruitment's dead or, you know, on its backside or whatever it may be. It's probably just a little bit more like it once was, where it requires more outreach, proper outreach. You know, you'll hear lots of recruitment podcasts where people are talking about, oh, you need to be BD focused and you need to be this. You just need to do the fundamentals. And something that I stole from sport, people talk about fundamentals and they're not fundamentals because they're easy. They're fundamentals because they're important.
Yeah.
And it's the foundation for everything. You know, if somebody's saying you need to make an appropriate amount of cold calls as you're just a fundamental KPI for the day, they're not doing it because it's easy. They're doing it because it is just key to success. And that's what you've got to do.
Absolutely. I think you started to touch on it about launching the business. What would your advice be now? You know, you've launched your business, you've kind of benefit of hindsight, you've left a good, strong company, you've got your heads together, you built a business plan that's now being implemented. What would your advice to be?
First thing would be people? Just do it.
Just do it.
First thing would be just do it.
Yeah.
Like, I think for Jack and I'm glad the timing that we've chosen to do it, I think is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. But the idea has been brewing for a while. And I think the first thing I would just say is literally just get it done. Because if you're good, you'll be surprised at how good you are. Like, genuinely. And again, the chap that we just mentioned, he turned around to me and said, sort of post all this, that you'll never really realise your true potential until it's your own. Like, I think you will never really truly realise your full potential until it's your own. So the first advice I would give is genuinely just do it. Then after that, I don't know, just try and enjoy every aspect of it. I made a joke the other day and I said, God, when we look back and we're 50 people, we've got a couple of offices, I was like, we'll probably miss the day where it's me and you in this room. We'll look back like that and just sit in the moment with it sometimes as well. Enjoy the CRM implementation stuff. Enjoy every aspect of it because, fingers crossed, it's the only time I'll ever have to do it.
First and last.
Yeah. And that's it. So enjoy every aspect of it. And then for me personally, I hope he says the same. Find somebody good to do it with. Find somebody good to do it with. It might not have to be your best mate, you know, I'm fortunate that it is, but find somebody that's good, that mirrors what you do. I harken back to it. Jack was always the hardest worker in the room. And that was a large part of the reason that I thought he'd be a great business partner. And that's something that I would say to anyone is maybe don't go it alone. Mm. Find somebody good and strap yourself to that.
Yeah, I think you've got to take the jump, really. I think this week we said, at one point, we're like, oh, I'm not sure I could work for someone else again. and not from like any negative standpoint, just because now we're both, like we said earlier, reinvigorated and it's ours and it's something that we're going to, you know, kind of push through with. And that is really exciting. And, you know, I've probably looked even at points over the first few weeks going, why have I not done this earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Why have I not done this earlier? Because, you know, it's been one of them that has been in the mind for God knows how long. It was always a bit different. I'm a contractor recruiter. I have walked away from a, you know, a fairly sizable book, and you're always going to do that in contracting.
Mm.
You know, you've got to take the gamble. But I wish I had done it a little bit sooner because, you know, even so far, it's so enjoyable and it is yours and you're the one driving it. And you do realise how good you are. So I'd always say to everyone, you know, take the risk.
Mm.
You know, in life, what is the worst that can happen? You know, if you don't take any risks in life, you probably just stagnate and look back in, I don't know, 20, 30 years' time, regretting the things that you haven't done. And like Lewis said, you know, strap yourself to someone who's good. You know, I'm probably more put the cones out, run into a brick wall, all of that stuff in terms of in operational. And you've probably told off the speaking in this podcast, Lewis loves all of that probably a little bit more than me. So, yeah, tag yourself to someone that you're going to want to work with and want to go through the journey with. And, you know, we're really lucky. We're doing it as best mates together and, you know, going to go through this journey. And it's going to be, you know, absolutely brilliant. And I think it is important from just, you know, I think you can do it on your own. But I think if you want to wanting to expand it, wanting to grow it, wanting to be, you know, more than just a lifestyle business, I would try and do it with someone. Because I think it's so much easier to bounce ideas off. You know, you will have strengths that person doesn't have, and they will have strengths that you don't have.
Yeah.
And I just think it makes it probably easier for you to kind of get up going, really.
Well, look, I think when we do this again in 12 months, I think it will be a very different conversation straight after a launch, and it's really exciting to see where Nine Tech are going to be. Jack and Louis, really appreciate the time today. Okay. Thank you.
Cheers, thanks.